Hi, Gudvach. This is Yisachar Wartel, and we are finishing Sefer Shemot this week. Believe it or not, it is a double parsha. That's right. It is not a leap year, but there are some parshiot that are doubled, especially since some of the Chagim are on Shabbos. No, the beginning of Pesach is not on Shabbos, although it's certainly interesting starting Motzi Shabbos, but the end of Pesach does, in fact, overlap with Shabbos. Anyway, I will be speaking a little bit about both Parshiot, Vayakhel and Pekudei. The first piece kind of deals with both. But at the beginning of Vayakhel, it mentions Betzal and Oholiab. And much of what is mentioned overall in these two Parshiot, especially Parshiot Vayakhel, was put together, in fact, by Betzal and Oholiab. They were imbued with divine insight, but their attributes are, in fact, described differently. About Betzalel, the Torah writes, and he was filled with the Spirit of God in wisdom, in understanding and knowledge, and in all matters of work. By Oholiab, the Torah writes, and then it ends the pasuk, and behold, I have given him with him, who is Oholiab, with him a heart, and all of those wise of heart I have given wisdom. I did cut out the middle for brevity's sake. But when speaking of Betzalel alone, the focus is specifically on mental wisdom and understanding, as the Torah says, lachshev machshevet, right? To contemplate a calculation, for lack of a better translation, right? To think of how the calculation should be. But when Oholiab is paired with Betzalel, the focus is no longer on the wisdom of the mind, but rather on the wisdom of the heart, as it says, chacham lev, right? The psukim above that I mentioned were actually from Parshat Kitisa, but it's reiterated in a nearly identical form in Parshat Vayakhel, right? As it says, Lohorot Natan Velibo, Huv Eliav, Mleoto Chachmat Lev, Lasoko Komlechet Cheresh Vachoshev Rokem. Right, so that's actually a different pasuk, but there's a lot of parallels between those, the wordings, and I guess it's a little hard to see without the text in front, but there's a lot of parallel wordings, even if the order of them is not the same. But basically, it again explains to do the wisdom of the heart and all of the different types of work they need to do. Now, the different aspects of the designs pertaining to the building and the building itself is relegated primarily to the mind, right? You have to calculate, you know, the dimensions, how things are going to look, you know, what needs to go where. It's a cheshbon, right? As we say, right? Say lachshov machshevet, it's a cheshbon, as they say, right? But the finer works of crafts, that's an art. And art requires a feeling from the heart, right? So in reality, Oholiab was the heir, Betzalel was all of his work, but the focus of Oholiab specifically was to stress upon the creation of the items that were not only functional, but were extravagantly decorative. They required an extra feeling of heart. Betzalel was chacham in his mind, Oholiab was chacham in his lev, and the two of them together were a beautiful combination that was necessary to make the Mishkan, right? They're called wise men of heart numerous times throughout our Parshiyot, and they were chosen to be the wise men to design the Mishkan. And that actually is hinted to, in a sense, in their names. Betzalel is Betzalkel, in the shadow or shade of God, and he sees himself as Betzalel Elohim and Hashem as his protector. He recognizes that Hashem is his creator, and that everything that he's doing, all of his talents that he's imbued with, is all because Hashem gave it to him, and it's all to serve Hashem. He dwells, therefore, in the shade of God. Oholiab is Oholeav. The Father is my tent. And so he's describing an element of protection to Hashem. Now note that Betzalel references Hashem as Kel, which connotes power, while Oholiab represents Hashem as Av, which is Father. And that's two different ways in which we interact with Hashem, and together we actually have the term, which comes up many times, but certainly on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, of Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King, different ways of relating to them, right? Betzalel was a more of a sense of Yira. It was, you know, a concept of respecting Hashem and who he was and really appreciating him, a great sense of awe. Oholiab was coming from more of a place of Ahava, a place of a father, a fatherly love. Now, both are integral, because Hashem is always a father to us, but in order to inspire awe, the Mishkan did have to be built with grandeur. And they had to complement each other in this way. They had to showcase the Malchut of Hashem specifically. Now, Betzalel had the mastery to understand this. He was in the shadow of Hashem and understood his essence to a greater degree and could see him as the king and also could contemplate him as the father. But serving Hashem with awe is not as great of a level as serving Hashem with ahava, and therefore two people were needed to see Hashem's protection. Because when two people work together, certainly one who has a more soul focus of Ahava, right? When the two of them work together, biyachad, right? They work together in unity and harmony to make this. It highlights their love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the recognition, and in turn, Hashem shows his love of the Jewish people and strengthens his relationship with them, right? They essentially, the two of them, function as the key aid them to Hashem's love, if you will. And therefore, they're both needed to complete, to make the Mishkan Shalom. Shalim. I said Shalom, a little bit of a Freudian slip there, because with unity comes Shalom. Now, dealing more with Parshat Pekudei, at the very end of Parshat Pekudei, the Mishkan's finally been erected, everything's complete and properly established. In Perek Mem Pasuk Lam Dalet, it states, "Hoyechasa anan et ohel moed v'kavod Hashem mala et Mishkan." The cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of Hashem filled the Mishkan. Now, until this point, most commentaries agree that the ohel moed, the tent of meeting, was Moshe's tent, and that it's often where Hashem spoke to Moshe, other than by Har Sinai. And it seems pretty clear from this pasuk, however, that the term ohel moed now refers to the Mishkan. Indeed, most commentaries state that the meetings between Hashem and Moshe took place either in or just outside the Holy of Holies. Now, I'm not doing it justice because this is actually, I believe, a huge machlokas Rishonim, possibly even Gaonim, I'm not sure, but it's a very big machlokas as to, in some of the particular instances, to what exactly Ohel Moed is referring to, and I'm not, for the most part, getting into that. But the end of the pasuk does state that the glory of Hashem filled the Mishkan. And in fact, the very next pasuk says, "V'loyachal Moshe kavod el ha'moed ki shachinu lav ha'anan v'kavod Hashem alei at the Mishkan." And Moshe wasn't able to enter the ohel moed because the cloud, meaning I guess like Hashem's intense presence through the Shechina, rested upon it, and the glory of Hashem filled the Mishkan. And if Moshe was unable to enter the Mishkan when it was filled with Hashem's presence, and when the cloud was lifted, when the camp traveled, when was there an opportunity for Moshe to be able to enter the Mishkan, right? So if when they were camped, Moshe's presence was in the Mishkan, I mean, Hashem's presence was in the Mishkan and Moshe couldn't enter, and they were traveling, Moshe's busy traveling, then when did Moshe have an opportunity to enter the Mishkan? So the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban address this and explain that because Hashem's glory filled the Mishkan, there could be no space to enter it unless Hashem willed it. However, when Hashem called to Moshe, then he, in a sense, carved the space that Moshe could enter. Moshe could then enter the Mishkan or the Ohel Moed. We still face the dilemma, though, how anyone other than Moshe could ever enter the Mishkan, right? So if the Ohel Moed is the Mishkan, how could any of the Kohanim, you know, even Aaron, go in there? You know, Karbanos had to be offered every day, many other types of avoda. So the Kli Yakar provides many revelations that add depth to a discussion and resolve this and other matters. Now, the Pasuk we mentioned before states that the cloud covered the tent of meeting and that the glory of Hashem filled the Mishkan. Kli Yakar explains that these two things, in fact, are different. The cloud, with the Anan, is not the same as the Kavod Hashem, even though you might think they are. Obviously, they're highly intertwined. But the glory of Hashem is Hashem's essence, which is like a blazing sun, and one cannot look directly into it, nor can one comprehend it. Therefore, it needed to be shielded by a cloud. The cloud was the periphery. It was, in fact, the outer, covering, if you will, of the glory of Hashem, the Kavod Hashem. Moshe had entered the cloud containing Hashem's presence before, right? So why could he not enter it now? So rather, it must be that they're usually kept separate, right? Right, that the cloud is one component, the glory of Hashem is another component, and when, not that I really understand this, but that when Moshe went up to Har Sinai, he went into the Anan, so to speak, but not the Kavod Hashem, right? Right, so effectively, it was a periphery, a boundary to Hashem's glory, and Moshe could go into the boundary, which was the cloud, right? But he could not, as a human being, in any physical form, enter Hashem's glory, but rather had to be completely veiled through the cloud. Additionally, when Bnei Israel traveled, they were covered by the Ohel, the protection of Hashem, in the form of a cloud. But when the glory of Hashem rested upon the Mishkan, the cloud rested atop of it, right? So, and presumably Moshe couldn't float. But, like, you know, seriously, though, but it wasn't that the cloud was enveloped around it. It was on top of it. So it didn't quite shield it, in a sense, right? It didn't really fill the Mishkan. The cloud didn't fill the Mishkan, but in this particular case, the glory of Hashem filled the Mishkan with the cloud above it. So at the completion of the Mishkan, it was interesting. Hashem's presence filled the Mishkan, but it was not veiled the cloud. So, sorry, let me backtrack a second. Normally, when Hashem's presence filled the Mishkan, it was surrounded by a cloud so that Moshe could enter the periphery. Whatever, whether it's the Mishkan, the Ohel Moed, whatever we're referring to as the Ohel Moed, right? Moshe could enter the periphery. But in this particular instance, the cloud was above it, and hence Moshe could not enter it. And the Kliyakar notes finally that Moshe could enter the Mishkan, but could not enter the Ohel Moed, which was actually the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which again is a matter of debate, right? Since the cloud rested atop it rather than veiling it. But the presence wasn't so concentrated in the rest of the Mishkan. Just outside of the Holy of Holies, the cloud was actually intermingled with the Kavod Hashem in order to veil it, which would allow Moshe to stand there. Obviously, it's just a little piece of a very, very large sugya, probably much of which is beyond my and many people's comprehension. But it's a little taste of what is there based on Samanyanim in our Pesukim. So, Shabbat Shalom.